The good news is today, both the right and the left agree that the place that is really best for children, the most responsible place, is inside of marriage.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thanks for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. Certainly, we all recognize the responsibility that adults, the government, and society at large have when it comes to safeguarding our children. Today's guest argues that as a matter of public policy, America has really abdicated much of that responsibility, but she also offers a path forward. We're joined today by Helen Alvarez, a family law professor at George Mason University's Scalia Law School. For over three decades, Professor Alvarez has practiced, taught, and written in both scholarly and secular venues about family and constitutional law, religion, and the welfare of women and children. Today, Professor Alvarez and I will be discussing several of the topics covered in her new book, Putting Children's Interest First in American Family Law. With power comes responsibility. Helen Alvarez, welcome to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we appreciate you being with us. Now, Professor Alvarez, you spend a good bit of time discussing non-marital or out-of-wedlock birth in your book. Why should society and government care so much about non-marital births, especially since they seem to be becoming much more commonplace in American culture today?
Right. Well, the first reason is the effects on children. And it's not just money, though money is a part of it. It's the disconnect, usually, or very reduced connection with a second parent. It's the fact that everything from cognitive to emotional to educational outcomes for kids is affected. And this is not in great contest. The right and the left and the literature on both sides tends to agree with it. And then two other reasons are that, you know, women are raising 86% of the children who are being raised in single-parent households, and they are struggling. It's a gigantic correlate of poverty among women. The men are missing out on fatherhood and the total family relationship. And we're also seeing that family structure, especially non-marital parenthood, is one of the very largest factors associated with the growing gaps in American society between the rich and the poor, between races. And also, we're thinking there's new literature about women and men, that boys who disproportionately grow up without their dads are falling behind their sisters pretty early, not catching up. And this might be closely related to the fact that girls are graduating college at rates now much higher than boys.
Well, it seems, too, that kind of getting things backwards in some degrees, that we're putting the interest and welfare of adults above the welfare of children. What other areas of our culture and even our laws do you find really prioritize the interest of adults over the welfare of children?
You know, you could range really widely on this, couldn't you? I mean, outside of my field, there's an awful lot of people writing about whether or not we're caring about our children with our environmental policies or our fiscal policies, our budgetary policies, our educational policies. I mean, there's a lot of people complaining that we're thinking about ourselves and our short-term and our adult individual interests. In the family arena, what the law has done, and the book goes through this in some detail, from talking about adults' fundamental interests in sexual expression without kids. You know, we talk about the laws constitutionalizing contraception for single folks. It's not that I want it illegal. I'm just saying that the cases stated that this was some gigantic, outsized adult interest in sex without kids. Then you get to abortion. So now it's sex without kids, but it's vis-a-vis ending their lives. Now you've got Lawrence versus Texas in 2003, where same-sex sex is now made a federal constitutional right. And then finally, you've got the same-sex marriage opinion in 2015, Obergefell, where the Supreme Court says, listen, states cannot prioritize procreation or couples who may procreate on the grounds that it would be nice to link children with their parents and parents with their children, and they should know and love one another. You are forbidden from saying that that's a particular state value. Instead, any two people who want to have sex and go through a commitment ceremony, that's what we value. And that's basically how they define marriage. So if that's really the case, the kids are utterly stripped out of marriage as a state definition. And adult sexual expression is so, you know, just waxed eloquent about in these cases. Then what you're saying is you don't really care how children's family structure begins. It's whether the adults are married, they're not married, whether they conceive artificially, et cetera. We don't really care. It's really what the adults want in terms of expressing themselves and realizing their personal identity. And of course, the outcome of that ends up being that children whose family structure is, you know, begun at conception are really at the back door of the law. And we try and make it up to them, but the programs aren't really doing that. In fact, they're not doing that.
So what do you see as some of the ways that we can help to restore and strengthen the acknowledgement of our culture toward the importance of children being raised by their biological parents, if at all possible, and creating a legal environment that supports that most ideal family structure?
Well, you know, the first thing is we have to stop being afraid of people who say, oh my gosh, you know, the Dan Quayle was back in our midst talking about the Murphy Brown program and you know, family values, and Dan Quayle and everyone who might agree with him just hates women and stigmatizes single parenthood and wants those children to be punished. All of that is wrong, and we have to get over it at this point, because then we let our own fears really triumph over what children need. The good news is today, both the right and the left agree that the place that is really best for children, the most responsible place, is inside of marriage. And there's a famous report now out. It's a Brookings, which is a left institution, American Enterprise Institute, which is a right institution, together issued a report that's cited in my book on opportunity, responsibility, et cetera, and agree that we have got to be speaking absolutely clearly about responsibility for children means thinking about where they're conceived and marriage would be best. But frankly, even before that, my first recommendation is that the government kind of, I put it, stop stupid and tell the truth. Under the Obama administration in particular, and I mean, these policies will return someday, and they're present at many state levels. They were partnering with Planned Parenthood and a group called Power to Decide, which used to be the National Campaign for Teen and Unplanned Pregnancy, which basically say, listen, if you're not a teenager, just have sex. You know, use contraception if you don't want kids. If you do want kids and you're single, don't worry about other people's opinion. You don't have to do anything except what makes you happy and pays the bills. I mean, this is literally linked on federal websites, and states are still using their materials in many cases. So we have to stop that kind of stupid advice, which is explicitly adults first, and we don't care about children. And it's in the name of, you know, if we close our eyes, we won't see what's happening to the kids. If we speak up about it, we're afraid to be accused of hating women or kids in single-parent families. No. We want to be compassionate. We want to be truthful at the same time. It can be done, but we haven't been doing it for a while.
Yeah.
This means things like sex ed turns into marriage and relationship education. It means we speak the truth. It means when the government is forking out billions of dollars of contraception, it basically issues a warning with it that says, hey, when you unlink the idea of sex and even the idea of children, marriage, extended family, kin, love, children are going to suffer. And by the way, women are going to suffer a lot too. And so are men. Because we actually prefer commitment with our childbearing and our love.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
In your book, of course, you spend a lot of time discussing men, women, relationships, contraception, and babies, but you also call attention to the topics of the economy and employment. Talk about that a little bit, if you would, the role that the economy and employment play in this big picture.
Right. I reference those for two reasons. One, because factually, it's true that unless people believe they have an opportunity for a job, and in particular, women want to marry men who are stably employed or have that possibility. They do. And people can say that's sexist or that's old-fashioned. You can call it whatever you like. But if you want to solve the problem, you have to realize that that's just the fact. And men themselves feel that they are ready for marriage or more qualified for it if they are, you know, have the opportunity to be stably employed. So we have to assist more men to get and keep employment, which means I make recommendations about, you know, from better scholars on this than myself, but I report them about better education leading to better employment. I reference those also because I want people on both the left and the right to understand that I do not see this issue as a partisan lens. I am not a political person. I'm a person about ideas. I'm a person about how do you shape the law for the common good, particularly for the vulnerable, and that means particularly for children and the poor in the United States. And so I wanted to signal and also to give some information about how it is that the left and the right issues have to come together to work on this. And we have to overcome partisanship in the name of doing something good for our future, which is everybody, which is kids.
So with that in mind, what role do you believe the government can play and should play in encouraging marriage and married parenting?
The things that I talked about previously, I would list there. Stop encouraging non-marital sex on your website and with the groups you partner with and give money to, like Planned Parenthood or Power to Decide. Start linking everything you talk about on sexual activity to marriage, children's family structure. This means the government sex ed program should be relationship and marriage programs. They have to speak absolutely explicitly about the good of children's being born into a married family structure. They have to do that explicitly. And I make a couple of other recommendations in the book, but these are some of the leading ones.
Well, and as we close our conversation, I know that many of our listeners are very interested in the what we've been discussing today and may be wondering, well, what role can I play? We've talked kind of about government in these sort of bigger picture perspectives, but as individuals who want to see prosperous families and want to see the role of parenting enhanced and also really are very concerned and committed to the welfare of our children. What role can we as individuals play in this? And what do you think the most important things that we can do in our daily lives to help foster this kind of environment can be?
Well, one thing we know is that people who grow up with parents who are mutually committed to one another and to a faith, this isn't for everybody, but for people who are and can, a strong and mutual and family, centered and family saturated environment where you practice religion together does a lot for families. And religions, when people have actual faith across any religion, actual faith, then their understanding of the human person is frankly increased. I mean, faith gives light. It's not a series of lines from scripture or teachings that are there as just these arbitrary rules. It's about who the human person is and how they're free in relationship to God. So a family of faith is definitely an advantage on this. Mm. Additionally, churches should speak frankly about this, and frankly and informedly. And here I'm going to make shameless, but not so shameless, because it's not about money, it's about good, my website on this. WomenSpeakForThemselves.com. It is largely women of faith who come together and say, you know, I'd like to be able to talk about this in a way that my children will understand, my sisters, my students, my fellow members of a congregation or a parish. And Women Speak For Themselves basically gives you fact sheets, a daily Facebook update, all about basically the sex, dating, and marriage marketplace created by a combination of culture and law today, where basically, you know, sex is cheap, women are pressured into it as the price of a date or a relationship, and it's not helping us. And it is it's a modern, informed, intelligent way of addressing this. And we have multitudinous amount of materials on the topics themselves, and then on how to communicate them effectively.
Mm. Well, let me repeat that website for our listeners. Again, womenspeakforthemselves.com. And Professor Alvarez's new book is Putting Children's Interest First in American Family Law. With power comes responsibility. And with that, Professor Helen Alvarez, I want to thank you so much for joining us on Family Policy Matters and for your excellent research and your commitment to teaching future generations about the importance of the issues that we've been discussing today.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.